Welcome to Wisco Dice!
Hey, you folks, I'm your host, the Conzi with the Most. Tonight, I am joined today by...
Hey, this is Justin, the Meeples Champion here.
And this is Matt, the Ghost Walker.
And I'm Suzanne.
And this is episode 141 of the Wisco Dice Tabletop Gaming Podcast. And this is April 23rd, 2025. On today's episode, we'll cover our review of the Mad Maxium Car Crushing Destruction board game Thunder Road Vendetta. But first, let's dive into the games we've been playing. And the first game we have been playing is Maracaibo. This is a game published by Capstone Games and plays probably three and a half hours, depending on experience and player groups, if you're playing with a full table of four players. By the way, it does play 1 to 4. It is designed by one of my favorite designers, Alexander Pfister. Now, this game is also implemented on Board Game Arena, where I've been playing it a lot lately because Board Game Arena automates some things and whatnot. I had to get it to the table, so we were able to get it to the table recently for a play. Of course, that gave us the opportunity to throw in an expansion that we bought that had been sitting on the Looking for Players table for far too long. And had an absolute blast playing it, although I think one of the players may have been in a little bit more than they had asked for that game. But ultimately, the theme of Maracaibo is that it's set in the Caribbean, somewhere around the 17th century. While you're playing, you're vying for influence in the three different nations that are also trying to control the Caribbean: England, France, and Spain. But you're also vying for trying to get followers and play various number of cards, get added to your tableau, deliver goods to cities because you're good merchants and want to ship things, but also, you know, you can do some privateering and have battles against other nations' ships. And of course, there is the adventuring aspect in going out where you can hike along this little track down at the bottom of the board. And I can't forget to include that there are quests in the games where you may need to have like 2 maps or 2 books or 2 something else's so that you can match what's on these quest tiles as well. So all of it's fairly abstracted. Ultimately, you're basically moving your ship every turn from 1 to 7 spots around a track. And when somebody gets to the end of the track, that ends the round, or that triggers the end of the round, which effectively each round is supposed to be like a decade in game time. And after 4 rounds, whoever has the most points after final scoring is done is the winner. So it sounds far simpler, but there is a lot of crunch and complexity to this one that makes it great for those of us that like a big, heavy, crunchy game. As I think I will note that we played this most recently. I think the third player in our 3-player game, probably based on the week he was having, that was a bit too much of a game for him. But even he was able to get through it, and I think he had a good time regardless. So with that, what do the rest of you think of Maracaibo?
I will just say it's been a while since I've played it in person. Like, we played it a bunch in person, and now I've played it online a few times. And it's one of these games that I feel looks like it should be very simple, but it really isn't. And if you decide it's too much of a game for you, you just go to the end really quick and and those decades in a flash.
You adopt the Suzanne strategy of how do I get this game over as fast as possible?
Yes, I enjoy the game. Don't get me wrong, but I do. Like your third player, I completely did not forget how difficult this and complex this game can be.
The funny thing about this one is, and I mean, Ben, you've known me for years, and some of these games that are crunchier, my brain disconnects completely and I struggle and I have to play it like 3-4 times before I really have a clue of what's going on. For some reason, this one, and I agree with you, it's crunchy, but for some reason, my brain just like connected to this one.
Yeah, you seem to snap onto it pretty quick.
And like Ben's right, there's a lot going on, but I did like this one from the perspective of there's a lot of different ways to earn points, and you can't ignore, like, you might be able to ignore like one or two of them and not put a lot of like emphasis on it, but you can really say, I'm only going to focus on these two or three things, and you'll do pretty well. I mean, because I didn't feel like you said, other than our third player who was just kind of having a rough week to begin with, yours and my scores weren't that far apart, I didn't think.
I'm just going to say, like, my and I don't know, I think I was in teaching mode in that game as well, so I spent a lot of my mental facilities were busy making sure everybody understood how things worked and not paying attention to what I was doing. But my most recent play on Board Game Arena, I had a 201-point score.
Yeah.
Which I think our scores were like 130, 120 something for the winning scores.
I thought it was closer to like 180 on that one.
It may have been. I don't know. I have to go look at what the scores were.
But like you said, I like it. The theme is abstracted, but it still feels like you're going port to port. There's some nice mechanics with the cards because the cards are usable in multiple ways. So you're collecting a hand of cards and you're either using those to complete quests or you're using to, say, deliver resources, or you're playing those cards and they're giving you extra abilities and things that you can do on your turn. So I like that aspect because you use those cards in multiple ways and it's not just build a deck of cards, and a lot of cool things going on in that game. I enjoyed it.
I love Alexander Pfister games. And if you're not familiar, maybe his most popular title is Great Western Trail. I think that's one of his bigger ones. And Maracaibo is my favorite Alexander Pfister game. I like this game a lot. One of the things I think is most fun for me about it is the customization of your personal shipboard. So as you're doing things during the game, you earn the ability to upgrade your personal board, where you move these little discs off of the board to clear spots, which give you new kinds of actions, new bonuses, new benefits. And I really like that aspect of the game. I think the card play, as Matt said, is really fun too. You get to customize your tableau and focus on what you want to focus on. Like, do I want to focus on combat and like taking over areas for the country that I'm invested in? Or do I just want to go for exploration and really get like all the way down that little track Ben mentioned at the bottom, where you're just exploring the land and finding all those kind of bonuses? It's got Pfister's kind of classic rondel system, but I think, as Suzanne mentioned too, the cool thing is you can kind of customize your game length, because each turn you basically decide, do I want to go like one space and just go to the next island and do whatever that ability is on the island? Or do I really want to jump forward, move seven spaces, and push the end of the game? Because I'm like close to, you know, it'd be good for me right now because I'm in the lead. I want to end the game sooner. I love that ability to kind of customize how fast things are going. And, you know, as you see people start to speed up, you're like, oh, well, I better start catching up. I can't just take my time doing every little action, which is really fun. Yeah, I would be curious to hear how the expansion went for you guys, because I do have it, but I have not played it, and I'm really curious about how that goes.
I mean, the expansion, I think, just added more stuff. It really was like, there was noticeable if you had played Maracaibo a lot before, but mechanically, I don't think it added that much different than the base game to really be like, oh, hey, I felt like you were playing with an expansion, which is a brilliant thing when you add an expansion.
Yeah.
Well, that expansion, there are several different modules that you end up mixing and matching from. There's like four or five different ways you can set up the expansion. And there's a couple cooperative, a more combative way. The way that you did was the all-inclusive. And I think there's also a campaign version with it. So the one that you guys played was the one that's supposed to be like, hey, the first time you play this expansion, or if you're a little newer to Maracaibo, so it has the least amount of differences.
Gotcha.
So it's good to know that it's a little different that way. I mean, I think what I did not play with expansion, but the upgrades on your shipboard seem very different. And I would feel like, I would worry that I would spend too much time focusing on upgrading my ship and not exploring, which I think is what usually is my pitfall in that game. So I don't know. Do you guys lean more towards upgrading one thing or fighting battles or?
I think it depended. Like two of the people on the board really focused on hitting the battles every time. I tended to lean into the exploration. I think all of us were doing, at the beginning part, I felt like we were all upgrading the ship fairly equally. And then a few of them went like a little heavier on upgrade the ship those last few turns. Because like I think mine was not quite as upgraded as other people, but it like I felt like it was one of those. I like the flexibility in how the scoring worked, because just because I didn't finish upgrading my ship, it didn't really hurt me on points. I mean, I think there were you had a few extra points, and so did the other guy on some of the extra upgrades, but it didn't like appreciably set me back or anything.
No, there is about a dozen different ways to score points in this game. That's for sure. That is Maracaibo from Capstone Games. Let's go a little wild with our next one. Suzanne, you want to tell us about that?
Oh, wild and me? I'm never wild. But this next game can be. Stop monkeying
around then.
Ha, ha, ha. Ha, ha, ha. For those of you who can't see me, he's getting a rolling eye look right now. The next game is Ark Nova. And we're going to kind of talk a little bit about the Marine Worlds expansion also. Ark Nova's been out for a bit, published by Freudlandspiel or Capstone Games here in the U.S. It can take 2.5 hours to play, or if you have a full group of four, it could take significantly longer depending on how much people sit and think. You can play it from anywhere from 1 to 4. I've not played it solo yet, unfortunately. I think all of us have played it, right? Everyone here has played it?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right. So for those of you listening that maybe haven't played it or have forgotten what Ark Nova is, this is what they consider a strategic mid to heavyweight game. So I guess mid to heavyweight's kind of subjective. I would put it more in the midweight. But you are going to build and manage zoo with the focus. Your focus, though, is on conservation and animal welfare. We're a good for the animal zoo. And you want to balance the growth of your zoo, the attractions, and your conservation efforts, and to score the most points. Because that's how you win. And everyone wants to win, right? Things that are unique about this game is the action card system. So you have a row of 5 action cards underneath your board. And in the expansion, you have an opportunity to draft to kind of swap some of these out to change the game up. So then maybe you have a little bit asymmetric abilities compared to everyone else. So these action cards include building. So building enclosures for the animals, having the animals come and fill those enclosures, drawing more animal and just other sponsor cards and everything else. Association action, which is kind of like building up your reputation with other zoos around the world or partnering with universities and stuff. And then sponsors, so bringing in more money for your zoo. So you have those. And the longer that the card, depending on where the card is in this river underneath your board, tells you how powerful of an action you can take. And the powerful of actions, it kind of what that means depends on the card a little bit. You do have these cards also. So there's this huge deck of cards, and you have a hand of cards that starts out pretty small. I think at the beginning, when you go to take a break, this you have to have, what, 3 cards in your hand, and you can upgrade it so you could have up to 5. But these cards are going to represent your sponsors, your animals, conservation projects, and you can pick your strategy based on the cards that you have, your endgame scoring card, which is unique to you, and just what cards you start off with. The scores are kind of unique. The nice about playing this online is that it calculates the score for you, which the first few games just kind of screwed me up a little bit and threw me for a loop, but it's really not complicated. You have your appeal track. So like you're think of it as like your tickets and your sales of people coming in that goes one way around the board, and going the other way around the board is your conservation score. So like, and those are going to like move 3 or 4 or 2 for every set of appeals.
But do you want to cross the streams with the conservation and the appeal score?
You definitely want to cross them. That's how you trigger the end game. When those two scores for one player cross, Endgame is triggered. And then the difference between your two numbers, kind of. And then whoever has the largest different, or the, sorry, the
largest positive
difference. Yes, positive, that's important. Otherwise, I would have won this game a lot more.
It's very possible to have a very big positive negative
difference. Yes. So, so that's like the basic of the game. The Marine Worlds expansion, guess what it has? It adds marine animals. So you have aquatic closures, and then you have marine animals, and a few other things it added in there.
Like, added the asymmetric.
So different cards that you put cards in there.
As well, which
it adds
really
more
cool.
maps. Like everyone can have a different map. So you just have a few more maps and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's going to just kind of change it up a little bit. It does not change a lot to how the game itself is played. So kind of like we talked about the Maracaibo expansion that the guys have played, it is pretty easy. That's very easy and almost seamless to add in. This is definitely one that if you have that 90 to 150 minutes or so to play, it's going to be great if you like building an engine and you want to blend some different strategies, so not just a Euro style kind of, but also have some economic management and feel like you're being good to the world and the earth. Yeah, so that's kind of Ark Nova in a nutshell. It's one that I really enjoy. I have a lot of fun playing it and everything. I will say that one thing that is always kind of funny is when people in their first round or so will build a zoo and have no animals in it, but and then kind of wonder why they don't have much income coming in that first turn. Have you guys ever done that? Built the zoo without any animals for your first round?
I don't think I've ever gone that far, but I have seen somebody that had to do it though, because the random cards they got in their hand were just like, some of them are very hard to do, and if you just get a bad draw, it could get a little ugly. But
yeah, I mean, I've had like, as an experienced player of Ark Nova, I've had games where I've had a bad initial draw and I just didn't play an animal for the first through the first like sequence until the first break. Yeah, that's happened before.
Yeah.
I've turned around and won those games. I actually turned around, I think the one time that I'm thinking of in particular, I won the game. So it wasn't necessarily completely a setback, but it took me a little while to build up the things. You know, because I had larger animals, I needed to build larger enclosures, which when you do that in the game, you spend more of your money and you don't have a lot of money because apparently running a zoo, like anything else that has money in a board game, means you're broke all the time. Why does it have to be so much like life? Just give me all the money, please.
But, yes, there is no lottery system. You don't win the lottery in this game or anything and spend it on a zoo. And I don't know. Justin, what's been your experience with the Ark Nova?
I haven't played this game a ton. I was curious, with the Marine Worlds expansion, I assume it adds like a bunch of cards. Do you just add that whole chunk of marine cards to the big old deck? Or do you take stuff out? You just make an even bigger deck?
Yep.
Okay.
And for anybody who's not experienced it before, Ark Nova already, like just the base game. Gigantic deck.
Well, what did we do last time we played Conzi?
I don't know.
We went through almost the entire deck of cards.
Yeah, we go through like half of that.
Because, especially in the Marine Worlds expansion, there are cards that have you searching through that draw pile.
Oh, that's nice.
There is a little more deck manipulation.
So
the base game, if you're familiar with Terraforming Mars, and a lot of people draw correlations between Ark Nova and Terraforming Mars, both games have this incredibly large deck of cards. Now, Terraforming Mars has a lot more mechanics for fishing through that deck of cards for new cards. And then you can add in optional drafting mechanics, et cetera, et cetera. Ark Nova base game, like you'll get that deck and you'll be like, okay, today I'm gonna play reptiles, and you'll never get a reptile.
Yeah.
Like you just won't. Like
your starting hand and your card will want you to do reptiles, and you'll never see them.
The eight cards you start with, and then you discard four of them, and then the between the river and what you draw off the top, you're like, yeah, I've got a reptile this entire game, and you have to be able to pivot your game and strategy based on the cards that you're able to get. Marine Worlds does do a little bit better job of adding, I think, some deck rotation into it. Like you said, we played a two-player, and I think we churned through about half the deck of cards.
Yep, and
that doesn't mean that half that deck of cards were cards that we actually got to look at and choose to add to our hands.
No.
Because there were a lot of times where it was like, search the deck and discard everything off the deck until you find an aquatic animal or a bear or whatever it is that you're searching for. So there were a lot of cards just getting randomly discarded that we might have wanted.
But had scavenging, which had you go through the discard deck a couple times.
Well, that just means you shuffle the discard deck. And when the discard deck is like half the deck, it's pretty random what you're getting out of it.
But I think that fixes one of the things that I struggle with in this game. And I mean, I enjoy Ark Nova, but I do agree. Like, one of the comments is that it's at the full four players, the play can get long. And that's true. But I think that was the struggle I had, is exactly what you talked about, is the first time I played this game, like, half my hand was primates. And I was like, this is awesome. I have a focus. And the entire rest of the game, other than what was in my hand, there were zero primates. I saw the whole rest of the game.
Mm-hmm. So, well, you shouldn't have been monkeying around so
apparently.
Much.
Apparently. But I will say, I don't think I've ever finished this game in a positive score. But, I mean, I still love the game. It's a lot of fun.
I mean, I love Ark Nova. I've played it a ridiculous amount of times now, in person and online. So, great game. There's definitely could be improvements, but I mean, that's what expansions are for.
I mean, we do have one guy we game with that is convinced that if you build a reptile house, you are going to win the game if you're the first person to build. Yep.
I never build a reptile house.
I know, but every time he has played the game, whoever is the first to build the reptile house wins.
Interesting. All right. Well, that is Ark Nova from Feuerland Spiel / Capstone Games.
And hey, you should check out WiscoDice.com for the links to all these games we've discussed. And while you're at it, please leave a review of this podcast wherever you download podcasts.
Yeah, Justin was just commenting about how we don't have any iTunes reviews. So go do it now.
We do need some new reviews, guys. Please do us a favor. Leave a review, leave a 5-star review. You know, everybody's telling you to leave 5-star reviews. Those definitely help. But yeah, leave any review, you know, tell us the truth. That's fine.
And if you're listening to this on YouTube, comment, like, subscribe. Do it now.
Do it now.
Let's roll into our main topic, or I should say rumble. And that main topic is Thunder Road Vendetta, published by Restoration Games. This is the ultimate post-apocalyptic racing game of destructions and cries of victory. Or, well, of course, more likely than not, there are going to be plenty of cries of defeat at the table. But the experience, that's just part of the experience of the game. Just like any racing game, though, ultimately your goal is to be the first to cross the finish line. Sure, sounds easy, right? Maybe. Yeah, sure. Probably not so easy. But you do get a team of vehicles that you're able to, really, you just need one of them. So, hey, you got a head start. You got more than one vehicle. You get lots of chances to get across that finish line. But your opponents have other plans for you, and they're going to slam their cars into you. They're going to shoot gunfire at you. And just when you think you've crept out to the lead, all of a sudden, the three other players you're playing with at the table are going to hone in with their helicopters on you and blow that lead car to smithereens. I do want to note, though, that we are featuring Thunder Road Vendetta as our racing game for what we call the Cone Cup here at the Cone Home. That's basically every year we pick one racing car game of some form and create a league where we play about one game a month. And we had the opportunity when we kicked off Thunder Road Vendetta to not only have three games getting played on the same night at the same time, but we were also able to snag one of the designers of Thunder Road Vendetta, Brett Myers, to come in and help us kick off the Cone Cup in real style this year. So it was real awesome to have him here. Really blessed to have a local designer like that in the Madison area. We were able to coordinate with. So of course, that's going to say a little bit about how I think this review is probably going to go. But if you're into post-apocalyptic racing with heavy player interaction and that sounds intriguing, then let's burn rubber and learn more about this game.
So I'm going to start off and give you an overview of the core mechanics, kind of give you a feel how the game is played. At a high level, Thunder Road Vendetta has got easy to learn mechanics. It's got a quick pace, helps keep downtime at a minimum and player engagement at a maximum. So here's kind of a feel for how the game plays from round to round. You have a play area that's been set up as a series of three large road tiles with multiple spaces with different kinds of terrain, like pavement, off-road spaces with just dirt, mud, other obstacles and hazards and stuff. And then each player has three vehicles in their control. You have a small buggy, you have a medium-sized car, and then a large, big old van. And then you also have a set of four dice that you're going to roll at the start of every round to basically use to move your cars down the roadway and try to win the race. On each of your turns, you're just going to choose one of your dice and assign it to one of your cars. And then at a basic level, you're just going to move the car that number of spaces that's on the die. So if you chose a four and you played it on your van, you'd move your van forward four spaces. Simple. At the end of your movement, if depending on how you're positioned against other cars on the road, you're also going to be able to shoot at other cars to deal them damage. You are obviously racing and fighting against other players, so there's definitely some combat involved here too. And as you race, you're going to encounter obstacles like hazards and terrain that's going to affect your cars. You might also find yourself slamming into other cars to get them out of your way, or maybe just because you love mayhem. And these events usually get handled by, they're dice driven, so you're kind of at the mercy of your rolls when a lot of these things happen. It is a dice driven game. There are some other ways that you have to manipulate your turn. You can use your dice for special options like a nitro boost, or you can repair damaged vehicles that somebody else has shot and damaged and taken out of the race. You can also send your attack helicopter to gun down your rivals. And then in a 3-4 player game, the race is just going to continue until one player has been eliminated. And then you're basically going to slap down a finish line, and whoever gets their car, their just one car is all it takes to get to the finish line, is going to win the game. Another thing I want to kind of cover is just sort of the flow of the game, the pace of the game. I think one of the reasons this game works so well is that it is very fast paced. Everybody stays involved, the adrenaline's up, and that really just matches and brings in the theme of this game. Turns are quick, so even if you know you're doing something like taking time resolving a multi-chain slam event where one car hits another one, it hits that car into another car, and that keeps happening, it's still exciting. It doesn't feel slow because exciting things are happening. Overall, too, the length of the game is fairly short, which I think is ideal thematically, and because the game does include player elimination. So if all your cars get destroyed, you know, you are going to be out of the game. And if you're unlucky enough for that to happen, you won't be sitting around too long because it is a shorter game and you still get to enjoy all the craziness that kind of ensues before the race ends. With this combination of easy to learn, chaotic, fun mechanics, and game flow, I think mechanically this game works really well. It plays smoothly and it plays quickly enough that if you get knocked out, hey, you can re-rack another game right afterwards. It won't take that much time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the real focus in my mind on this game is if you're looking for what sort of strategy do I need to follow, in my mind, it's really about embracing the pure chaos of this game. Because it is a dice-driven game, and in my mind, it has such a heavy player interaction, this is a game that we will, like Justin said, it's a shorter game, so we will typically play in one of two modes. We have done the traditional race, which is a more linear board where you just kind of keep adding tiles until I believe it's till somebody's eliminated is one of the triggers. And then that draws the finish line. Or there is another mode that we have played, which is I call it an homage to the Mad Max Thunderdome, where you are entering into this circular style arena and racing for competitive super weapons on your cars, and basically last person standing is the person who wins.
Those are two different so there's the base game, which is the linear race. And then there is an expansion that adds in the
Carnival of Chaos,
which adds in the Thunderdome kind of homage.
Well, and I feel like, though, it is really, the nice thing is both of them are very thematic, and I do feel like the game is so chaotic that it's just a lot of fun from that perspective. I mean, there, not to say that there is no strategy. There's definitely strategy for how you approach it. Most important things in my mind is like being able to figure out where you want to position your cars, what car you want to do. If you're planning a slam, you might say, hey, I'm going to line up to slam Conzi, but I'm going to make sure that when I hit him, I'm going to hit him with my van, because if you have the bigger car, you have a chance to re-roll the bounce, so to speak, because when two cars collide, one of them's going to go somewhere and you roll the dice randomly, but there's a chance you might bounce the wrong way. And then you might, your carefully planned slam might slam you right into the wall. So there is a lot of strategy from how you position, maybe take lining up a shot on somebody. But ultimately, in my mind, this is one of those games that you just have to accept the chaos, because you're going to have bad dice rolls. You're going to have somebody starts a chain reaction and bounces off of somebody, and you're the fourth car in the line. And then, sorry, you were the one that slammed into the wall and exploded.
And if there's one other thing strategically about this game, never take a big lead.
Never.
That car is doomed.
Well, wait. You take the big lead if you want to sneak your other cars up the back without anyone watching. You sacrifice that car up on the lead.
Yeah, that's exactly. You'll be sacrificing it, and then you're down a car, and hopefully you can weather the rest of the carnage.
There's one car remaining to win. You just need one. It's totally fine.
And that is a very common strategy I've seen. Or I've even noticed, like, if we're playing in the circular Mad Max arena, when one person's the person seems to have gotten ahead, three helicopters descend on them. It just turns into
mess. There's the don't expect to win if you're Conzi either.
Small details.
Apparently that guy gets nuked.
Not by me. Don't look at me. I have not played against you in a while anyway.
Well,
so.
Admittedly, I believe I took out the other guy first. But accessibility, though, I do feel like this game is fairly easy to learn. I mean, it was a super quick teach. And once you get through one round, everybody kind of generally knows. I mean, there's little hiccups, I feel like, with where somebody forgets maybe how to use the extra board that has, like, if you roll a six, you can heal a thing, things like that. But otherwise, it's a super easy learn. It's something that you can just grab a couple of cars when you're doing the teach and kind of show a physical example. So if you have one of those people that needs that sort of visual explanation, you can do it. It takes like just a couple of minutes to go through. Even the first time I played, I mean, just somebody taught it to me in just a few minutes, and I did pretty well on that particular playthrough. And then I got slaughtered in the next re-rack, but that Brett guy, he just totally wrecked me. I'm just saying. But if you know, we have different people like player interaction at different level. If you do not like player interaction games, do not play this game. This game is 100% in my mind about player interaction. That's in my mind, three quarters of the fun of this game. Yes, you could race and try to get to the end, but this game is at its core about knocking out your opponents, because one of the ways you trigger the end game is you got to knock people out and kill them. So you have to accept that you're going to do a lot of running and gunning against others, and they're going to shoot at you too. Also think about that, though, if you're thinking of this game as one to play with your group, if you have players that do not deal well with other players targeting them, they might not be one you want to invite to that particular night if you plan on playing this game. Like I said, I think the nice thing about the high level of player interaction is very much like Justin alluded to. I felt that keeps you engaged, because even though I might have just finished my turn and it's now Conzi's turn, I have to pay attention, because he might be coming after my car or the next person. Or frankly, some of those interactions where cars are bouncing off the wall are just a hoot. And, you know, I'm invested in how the dice comes out just as much as anybody else. Overall player count, it is playable by 2 to 4 players. It's lists of a 45 to 75 minute playtime. I felt like if you know people know the game, you can absolutely play it in about an hour easily, even at a 4-player count. I found it to be the most fun for me at 4. 3 is pretty good, but I felt like 4 players, there was a little bit more chaos, and you would think more players, slower play. I don't know. I felt like the carnage started earlier, and then it was just a lot more fun. So
4 players equals faster eliminations, equals less activations of stuff, equals shorter game.
Yeah, because there's not that much scaling that happens with a 2-player game versus a 4. There's some. Yeah.
Not that much.
But I mean, I feel like this is one of those games that typically, if we put it on your normal Thursday game nights that we do, it'll probably get played twice for the table that's doing it, or they'll throw in another smaller game. So it is quick enough that it's one that you can be like, hey, I did really awful in the first one, come back with a vengeance for the second one.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it is one that you're not dedicating your entire night to playing the game. So if you're, like you said, if you get knocked out, not a big deal. So another fun component though with this are, well, just the components and the overall aesthetics of this game, I think, are great. We have the Chrome, the base game. Well, sorry, we have the base game and then the Chrome Edition. And the Chrome Edition has about 5 expansions all combined into one box. You can buy all of these expansions separately, but it's definitely more expensive. The Chrome Edition is double what the base game is right now. But if you're someone who's going to want all the expansions or want to keep buying it, you might as well just go all in right away. There is not a huge difference, I don't think, in like the regular components themselves. It's just the volume of what you have. So like I said, the base game has everything you need to have a blast right out of the box. You have the track tiles with this wild, unpredictable gameplay that they give you that, like, just every time you play, it's a different path. It's a different track that you're playing. But if you're the type who really likes to mix things up, like I said, get that. I would be happy sticking with the base game, and I have been happy sticking with the base game for a while, but when Chrome Edition came out, guess what Conesy did? He bought it, and I was not opposed to it. So, like, I do really like the chaotic, over-the-top fun and crazy that's in this racing game. So, I'm happy when all
I would note, we started with the base Thunder Road Vendetta base game.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun playing it, but it did, after, I don't know, probably a dozen plays or so, I started to burn out of it just with what the contents were in the base game. Now, it might not be everybody's experience, but it started like not having like a little bit more variety in the types of chaos that could happen that come with the Chrome Edition and come with some of the extra components like the fire dice or having the big rig or the motorcycles or some of those other little things that just spice the game up just a little bit. That come with either the Chrome Edition or if you pick up the expansions. Really, I would just pick up the Chrome Edition versus base game.
You're going to save yourself over $100. I was doing the math online ahead of this. But yeah, if you want all the expansions, definitely.
But just, we ended up starting with base game only.
Because that's all. Like,
that was all we could get our hands
on. It was tough to get our hands on it when we got it. I think we got extra dice before. We actually got the game.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like what we could get at Gen Con. So the art is done by Marie Bergeron for all of the Thunder Road games. And her art style it's just this bold, gritty visual style that screams 1980s post-apocalyptic cinema. So it really embodies this like Mad Max meets the Grindhouse movie posters is what you're going to see. So it's gritty, it's chaotic, it's high contrast for the artwork. It's almost in some ways slightly abstract, but not really. It's just really stands out, this type of artwork. And then it follows through onto the table for me. Like, if you have these chunky, nice chunky dice. They're like an oversized D6. You have the module road boards that like play into how the game you progress down them. And then you have these cars that are just a very vivid color. There's no mistaking your player color for another's. Unless you forget that you are playing like blue and grab the green car instead or something like that, which that's your issue or my issue, I guess. So it's really got this nice blend of what I would say is old school charm with like a fresh take on it. So do you want to add something there, Conzi? Okay. I like this artwork. It does not fit anywhere in our house right now, but the theme then, there is this theme that Matt was talking about, kind of like a Mad Max. And for me, who has seen the Mad Max movies, my favorite part are the car racing. It's my only part that I actually pay attention to a lot of times. I feel it definitely comes through. Like you are gunning for other players and you're rewarded for driving recklessly. Like for me, playing it safe does not make this an interesting game. You can just plod along. But no, there's no fun in that. It draws the game out and you get really bored. You really, for myself, I really feel like you're competing for your life in a board game. And there's like this desolate, unforgiving environment that's conveyed through this artwork. So you feel like you don't have much to lose as you're going through these canyons and trying not to fall off the edge of a cliff. And with the the Carnival Chaos expansion, oh my gosh, when I play that, I feel like I am in this like racing bowl where I'm going around in circles and who knows what's going to pop up. Anything could happen. Who knows which way the next car is going to be coming at you. So just, I mean, I'm not going to go racing around in a bowl but I'm not like, I don't have a death wish or any way, but this way you definitely get that feeling. The energy for me is just really high. Components on here, I would say that I have zero complaints with the components. These have held up. The cars, like I said, mentioned before, are easy to identify your color. The cards themselves are holding up to repeated use. We do have the sleeves, which are a bonus, but they are not required. I kind of like the look of them. They've got like a little nice design on the cards that come with it, the official really cool ones. Yeah. I will say, I don't feel like any of the game components you play with is really overproduced, aside from maybe the first player token. It's this like nice, heavy, giant metal coin. There's maybe a bit more than it's needed, but to me, when I get past it, it feels kind of special to have this weighty metal coin in my hands. So it's like, hey, look, I may not be first in the race, but I am first player. And yay, I'm energized to go first now. So that's, you know, kind of this game just definitely invokes the feeling that they're trying to convey, I feel, with their artwork. But that's how it looks. How is this to figure out for like a first time owner and player? Are they able to do that?
Yeah, the rulebook's really well laid out. And I think it's really easy to understand the core mechanics of the game. I think there is a little bit of vagueness in the rules. And I've run into a number of other groups that I've played this game with that play certain aspects subtly differently, and I think that leads to some of the vagueness in the core rules. But that said, it's very easy to understand. There's a lot of really good pictures, graphics, all in that same art style. The iconography is very, like, once you know, it's pretty easy to learn, and once you know it, it makes sense, and you can pretty easily translate how things are supposed to work and it mechanically when you see an icon. But I do wish they offered a player reference that had Basically, here are all the hazards for all of the expansions, and here are all of the road obstacles.
Oh, so what's going to happen into, when you do it?
So yeah. That when you hit those, you could quick look. That means I roll these two, and then like a little dice guide. What is each dice supposed to be? Because there are either yes, it's a dice game, but there are many different dice. These aren't like six-sided dice or 20-sided dice.
They are
they're six-sided, dice. But they're not traditional six-sided dice with 1 through 6 on them. They're like one dice is going to be like a directional die, and one die is a top or bottom car. One die is
the stunt die. There's a stunt die and an attack die.
Yeah. The fire die and all these different dice that are doing different things, and they're just different colors.
Yeah.
But it would be nice if then there was like a little reminder as to when you use them, because inevitably one of two things, we talk about the fast pace of this game. We talk about how it's really like everybody's into it and the action. There's almost inevitably in most of the plays that I've had some point where somebody hits one of those road obstacle tiles and we flip it over and we're like, what does that do? And then somebody's flipping through a rule book because it's not on the back cover. It's like somewhere in the middle of the rule book, trying to flip over the rule book. And you can find it really pretty quick, but it's, why couldn't I just have that on a 2-player aid? That's like probably like my only rules concern here with this game.
I'll say the vagueness of the rule book, I feel, is a little bit thematic of this like no holds barred, anything goes feeling that I get when I'm playing the game. Like, hey, it's the whole, you know, you get your home rules. My rules are my rules.
Yeah, I think that adds confusion. In a game that is about player interaction, when you have a little confusion, if somebody can really take that the wrong way.
Well, yes, but just write it on an index card and add it to the rule book.
Yeah, there's too many rule books around here that say Suzanne wins.
I bet there's some even at Justin and Matt's house that say Suzanne wins if she plays this game.
Gotta watch you when you come over next time.
You're gonna find little index cards hidden all over your house.
Your wife will
be wondering what the heck they mean.
She comes prepared now to all games she plays.
There we go.
Oh my goodness.
All right. Well, I think that gets us pretty much to the point where we're at final thoughts. So here at Wisco Dice, we do rank things on a 1 to 10 scale, where 1 is like you're just sitting in the crowd, watching one of these races, minding your own business when a car gets slammed, flips upside down, lands on top of you, and you miss the entire race. But 10 would be like where you just coasted along, perfect race, you got way out in the lead, everybody's helicopter shot at you, and they all rolled misses, and you cross the finish line and go, na-na-da-boo-boo, you couldn't catch me,
and you win the race. Into the wall.
No, you won. You don't have to worry about slamming into the wall. All right, so with that, I'll go ahead and kick things off. I love this game. I gave it an 8.5. I do know it's very random at times, but even if you get eliminated, the game is over pretty much the next turn. So it's not like, it's not always the next turn, but it's almost always the next turn after you've been eliminated. So it's done within the next like probably 10 minutes. So it's not like you're sitting around with a lot of time to just twiddle your thumbs. And the whole time, whoever took you out, you're rooting for them to get knocked out because,
absolutely.
What else you got better to do?
For sure.
Justin, you got any thoughts?
Yeah. So for me, I'm rating this game an 8. I really like this game. I think it has broad appeal, could easily be played by people who are not hardcore board gamers. It dips into that nostalgia for these 80s Mad Max, you know, post-apocalyptic movies. And there's a good mix of a little bit of strategy, of kind of planning things out, positioning yourself, figuring out when to take a risk, when to slam people, and just that little bit of strategy plus this exciting randomness of dice rolling really just put this all together in a really awesome package for me. So
I felt for me, and I feel like I'm a little bit of a harsher judge, not necessarily because of the game. I just tend to like for me, getting to a 10 is really, really hard. I rated it at a 7. It is an absolutely solid game. It is a huge fun, very enjoyable, very chaotic. I mean, hell, I still remember, and like Ben said, I got the opportunity to play with Brett Myers. There were three of us at the table, and I remember this distinctly with just like one person started a chain reaction that bounced off four separate cars, and everybody was cheering like the whole time. So it's just a lot of fun. It's silly, it's fun. And like Ben said, if you don't take it too seriously, you're just going to have a really good time, even if you're the person whose three cars just exploded in sequence.
I mean, sometimes I just want to get knocked out of the game a little bit just so that I can sit there and, you know, cheer on the other players and the chaos that ensues and stuff. I'm rating this game a 9 for me. I love playing this game. It is just chaotic fun for me. It is not a game that I am going to, you know, feel like I'm going in with the strategy I need to win it this time. It's always me going in being like, what chaos can I create? What chaos is going to be created? How is it going to be different this time? How bad are my dice going to roll? It's like, I have friends that they love playing Bunko or Bingo, and they just have that as their, like, fun and crazy time. For me, that is Thunder Road Vendetta.
Yeah, absolutely. So I will add one other thing. We've talked a lot about how crazy and random this game can be, and dice, et cetera, et cetera. There is an expansion to this game that replaces the dice you roll for how fast each of your cars go with a deck of cards that you're drawing, and you have a hand of cards with various 1 through 6 on them. So if you are the kind of person who doesn't like quite as much random in your game, can swap that in as an expansion to address some of the random. But anyways, that is our review of Thunder Road Vendetta from Restoration Games. Of course, we started out this episode with far more serious, crunchy, heavy games in the form of Ark Nova from Feuerland Spiel and Capstone Games, as well as Maracaibo from Capstone Games. So, absolutely a bunch of great games. It's been absolutely a great blast. Hope you've enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you leave a review of this show wherever your favorite place is to find podcasts. Oh, and by the way, give us a like on our Facebook page. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, or Pinterest while you're at it. If you haven't looked recently, make sure you catch up on the blog at wiscodice.com. Hey, Brian, what's that site?
Ah, darn, I forget. Justin, what's our website again?
Wiscodice.com.
That's right, it's wiscodice.com. And until next time, everyone, peace out.